Accession number 28664, Mr. David Butler, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Butler?
I was born in February 26, 1935, in the Warnford Hospital, Leamington Spa.
And was that where your family lived, Leamington?
No, Warwick.
Warwick. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about your family, that background in Warwick?
My father was Wilfred Lionel Butler. He worked for the town council. And my mother was Constant Mary Butler, who was at the time a parlour maid. And then she changed to cleaning for a dentist. And then she went into a factory when the war started.
Now, was it a comfortable childhood? What, do you remember much about your childhood?
Yes, it was a very comfortable childhood. Very comfortable. I had a sister 1 year older than me. And I had a younger brother who died at the age of 3 months. I've never got to the bottom of what how he died, but he naturally he passed away, and he's buried in Warwick Cemetery. And his name was Raymond, and my sister's name is Jean. We got brought home to, we lived in Friar Street in Warwick at the unlucky number of 13, but that has never been an unlucky number for me. And then in 1952.
Hang on a bit. So it was a comfortable childhood. Dad, your parents were both in regular employment.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what impact did the war make on you? Because you'd be about four or five when the war started.
Yeah.
What impact did that have on your childhood?
It's hard to say what the impact of the war had. It was a bit of an adventure, I suppose, to me. My father became an ARP warden. And as I say, my mother went into the factory making bowls and dishes and that for that you cook the food in the ships and all the army messes and one of you in aluminium for the services. But I think we was comfortable in Warwick as far as that was concerned. The war it didn't really touch us, although we had Coventry and Birmingham by us. And we just got on. I started school at the age of 3 and a half at Westgate School, which is still going today.
Now, what kind of an education did you have?
At Westgate, a good one. And we went to school at 3 and a half, and you stayed in the one school all the way through until you finished. But after the war ended. Although I'm jumping the gun, after the war ended, we then got put down to another school at the other side of Warwick. I wasn't awfully keen on that.
Why not?
Because I didn't advance my education as far as I was concerned. When we left Westgate School, at the age of 11, we'd started on algebra. When we went to the new school, algebra wasn't even on the curriculum. So a lot of us lads, we didn't mess around or anything, but I got put into the, I used to go down to the metal workshop when we had Mr. Davis, our teacher, used to send me to see Mr. Moorcroft, the metalwork teacher, and I used to work a lathe for him. I was quite good on the lathe, apparently, unbeknown to me, and some of the other lads used to do gardening and all sorts that came from Westgate School. But we never really got stuck into it at all. I was in the B grade. The A grade was, I think they did do IS arithmetic. But I can't really remember, to be very, very honest, because it didn't involve me. So
did you take your school certificate? Or
No. I tried for the Warwick School, which is the local private school here. And I passed for it, but with the 1947 change around of schools, all that from local schools was cancelled. And so nobody went in that year. A friend of mine went the year before, and a friend of mine went the year after. But that's how it goes. I've got to take the bad with the smooth.
Did you have any particular favourite subjects, or subjects you were good at, or subjects you were bad at?
Science I wasn't brilliant at. Geography and maths I loved. English, average. But I loved geography. I always did. And even now, people talk to me about geography, and I'm pretty all fair on most places in the world. The new names do annoy me at times, because you have to start really think which country it was. because they keep changing the names. But we had a smashing maths teacher, Mr. Holcroft at Westgate, and he was brilliant. And eventually, he passed away when he went to Australia after he retired. But
now, did you have any big hobbies outside of school? You know, either a sport. Boy Scouts.
No sport. I was in the Cubs, the Scouts.
Now tell me about your Cubs and Scouts activities first. What did you do with them?
With the Cubs, we used to meet in Castle Lane, and our Kayla was a lady, Miss Hatcher, from the same street as where my grandparents lived, so I knew her well. And we used to do all sorts of things, and used to pass all your badges, go camping, and sing the songs that you used to do around the campfire, which I couldn't probably do now. And we used to go away camping, and then with the Scouts, I motivated then up to the Scouts, and the same sort of thing happened. I used to pass me badges, and that, and then I think at the age of 11, I joined the choir at our local church.
With the Scouts, how military was the Scouts? Because some groups are military, not military, but, you know, military-orientated, some aren't, you know.
You had to learn to march, and you had to learn to salute, the main thing is you had to behave yourself. If you stepped out of line, you was warned, and if it became a habit, then you was dismissed. And there was no two ways about it. But it wasn't a harsh regime. I can't even remember who our Scout Master was, to be honest.
So it's just discipline.
Good discipline. Good.
Did you go away camping?
Yes, we did.
Where'd you go?
We went down. We had one down on the south coast near my auntie's, who lived down there, just outside Portsmouth. And then the one I remember most was we went to Barmouth in Wales. And when we was there, we bought some lemonade, or what we thought was lemonade. And we got sent home because apparently it was cider we'd bought, and we didn't realise it at the time. It was apple juice. Well, no, I can remember it being called apple juice, and about six of us, we were sitting on the cliff drinking it. But we never got down the cliff because we couldn't walk down the cliff. And the Scout Master come up and found us, and he just sat there with us, and a little bit annoyed, and then he got one of the senior scouts, I can't think of David somebody, and he put us on the train back home, and he had to come with us as well, so we spoilt his thing, and I think that was the most memorable thing. But we'd done all sorts of things. You were taught to cook, light fires, orienteering, and all that sort of thing that, you know, normally scouts do. I think they're probably a bit more adventurous now because they've got more facilities. We didn't have nothing like wild water rafting or anything like that they do now. And rope climbing. Yeah, I suppose you'd done rope climbing because you was in the gym and something like that. But there's nothing like you've got now. I think the scouts and the guides and that today have got a lot more going for them as far as adventure is concerned.
Now, what about that? You mentioned the choir. Was that important to you, the choir?
No, I used to go to Sunday school, and every Sunday, and it just went on from there. Mr. Davis, or the Reverend Davis, who used to live at the top of Friar Street, because I went to St. Paul's Church in Friar Street, he was looking for some choristers, and he asked for some lads, and we done what you might call an audition, and Mr. Spooner was the choir master. Mr. Spooner was a choir master, and he said, yeah, you lads will do. And then I asked the girls, and I think he got about three girls out of it, but yeah, we're doing it. And then you went on from there, and we stayed in the choir, and naturally, through the progression of life, my sister and I were confirmed in the church. And that was part of growing up. You went to church. And if the church asked you to do something, you'd done something. I think, you know, nowadays there's not enough put on it.
Now, what about sport? You mentioned sport, but was sport important to you?
Yes, it was. I didn't realise until I got told by my father that when I was very young, and so I've got to be below three, I used to wear leg irons. Because my knees were not straight or something like that. I've got to steal one now, and I'll go and wait for the other one to be done. My legs weren't straight, so I was in irons. And my granddad, who lived in Albert Street in Warwick, he said, put him down here. He said, bring him down here. He said, he can live with me. He said, me and my grandmother. He said, and I'll teach him to walk. He said, I'll get him to walk. So I must have had trouble with my legs walking. I don't remember ever wearing them. But my granddad taught me to walk apparently. Because that led on to another thing. There was a chap next door that was in the Navy, and he gave me his hat, and that's why it came about that I joined the Navy. Because he'd given me that, he knew he'd come home in the war, or just before the war, obviously. No, just before the war. And I used to like his hat, and he used to come in and see me granny and granddad, and he said, yeah, give the little one this. And I had it for years and years and years. I don't know what happened to it. But he gave me his hat, I've always wanted to join the Navy. The only member of our family that ever joined the Navy.
Now, we will come back to that.
Sport.
Now, sport. Tell us about that. Then.
Well, yeah, we used to, outside the Warwick Gate, I was outside the gates here, we had the Common, you see. The race course is commonly called the Common in Warwick, by people who were born and bred in Warwick. And we was always on there, running around it, or playing football, playing cricket, whatever the case may be. And we all used to have a little kick around in the area by the main gates that was traffic-free. Most of the roads were traffic-free in them days, obviously. And so we was always playing football there, and we used to play. I never really joined a team, but I played for the school. And then when I left school, I went and played for a team called Leamington Victoria in goal. I always seemed, because I was tall, I suppose I took over the goalkeeping job, because it was easier for me to reach the high ones. And running, that was another one that we used to do. And then when we changed school from Westgate, I'll digress for a moment, our school captain at football, when we was at Westgate, was Randolph Chirpin, who became the world middleweight boxing champion. He was our captain at school, and he didn't like losing. And if we lost, the person to blame used to get a thump of the ear hole. A couple of times it was me, because I happened to be in goal. But he didn't like losing, we didn't lose very often. And then when we went to Coton End, which was the second school in my life, we used to do sports days, the sports days, running and what have you. And one of the sports masters, Ron Healy, ex-squadron leader in the RAF, he said, you're a tall lad. And he said, why don't you try the high jump? So he got me going on the high jump, and eventually I won the Warwickshire Championships. And it was the old scissor kick then, when you used to run up, not like the Fosby flop now. It used to run up, and then you jump from the side, and you used to kick your legs in the air and jump over the pole. I can't, 4'9", I think I got to, something like that, as a 13-year-old. But I was allowed as well when training, because we didn't have training facilities in the school, like a gym or anything, I was allowed to train on the teacher's lawn in my lunch hour, and that was a privilege, a real privilege, to be on that lawn. And then from then on, I just took sport as it came. If ever there was anything sporting, I used to have a give it a go. The only game I didn't really play was rugby, and when I got called up to play rugby later in my life, I damaged my cartilage, so I couldn't play. I damaged my cartilage playing football in Singapore.
Now, Were you a member of any boys' clubs or boys' sporting clubs? Because they used to have boys'.
National Association of Youth Clubs. I was a member of that one.
What did that provide?
And also, just a minute, excuse me. Let's go back a bit now. In Far Street, we had a church hall. And when the war was on, we had an army barracks the other side of Warwick. By Parkway Railway Station, where you're going today, there was an army barracks up there. And the soldiers and any servicemen stationed there, sometimes there was RAF and whatever, they used to come down to this church hall in Far Street, which is now the new church in Far Street. And I can't remember the ladies. The WVS, we'll call them. The WVS used to put on refreshments, and there was tables where they could play cards and that. And they had a piano, no, where we used to have a sing-song. And somewhere along the line, I got invited to be taught to play the piano. I used to sit by this bloke, I can't remember. But a Sergeant Beer, his name was, he was in the RAF. And he tried to teach me to play the piano. Because my Aunt Lil used to play the piano, she was very good. No matter where you went, if there was a piano, she'd play it. Without music or anything. That was the sort of thing they did in them days. These older people. They learnt the piano themselves. They couldn't read a note of music, but they could listen to the tunes and play them. And this Sergeant Beer was the same. And he tried to teach me to play the piano, but he said he'd got to go one day, and I never seen him again. And then when the war ended, the vicar took over it just as a little youth club. And we used to do boxing, games. We did try to form a football team, if I remember rightly. But it never come to fruition. He was not the sort of sporting man he was, but at least it'll give him his due. He tried. But we used to do all sorts of little things, mainly indoor games and what have you, in this church hall.
Now, what happened when you left school? How old would you be? 14?
15, just 15.
So 1950.
1950, yeah. And I wanted to be an electrician.
Now, what would put you that way?
I don't know. I really don't know. I wanted to be an electrician, and there was a job going in Leamington. Another kid who lived in Fire Street, and myself, were going to the same firm for a job. He was going in the morning, and my interview was in the afternoon. He got the job, but I had to wait 6 weeks if I wanted the job. And my mother said, yeah, that's okay, you know. I said, no, it's not okay, mother. I said, you can't afford to keep me for 6 weeks until this job comes up. So, for some unknown reason, I went and got a job on the railways. I went down to Warwick Station, and the station master gave me a form. I filled it in. He sent it off. And 3 days later, I was going down to Swindon for a medical to join the railways.
Now, what were you going to work as on the railways?
I started off as a lad porter. And I went to a place called Knowle and Dowage, which is about 10 miles out of Warwick, halfway between here and Birmingham, about 10 miles. And I went there for a year.
And now, that's a job that barely exists now, or not as you'd recognise it. Anyway,
no.
What was the job as a lad porter? Just tell us what you had to do. I know it's fairly obvious to you, but...
Well, I used to catch the early morning train, if I was on the earliest, and the first thing to do was, I used to work with a chap called Harry Smith. Another bloke on the station, on the other shift, was Harry Farmer. Mr. Thomas was the station master, and he came from Wales, hence the name. And him and I joined approximately the same time. The first thing one had to do was make the tea. And the proverbial apprentice's starting job, but make the tea. And then you had to clean the toilets, sweep out the waiting room, keep it tidy, sweep the platforms, and there was four to do. Also, you had to see about the trains coming in. Harry, the porter, and he had been on the railway best part of 50 years, Harry had. He was the one that always got the suitcases, unless they was extremely heavy, and then he'd call moi, or me, over.
I presume he got the tips.
He got the tips, yeah, yeah. Harry was never daft. And then, and you clean the stuff, and then if there was some gardening to do, you clean the windows around the shed, you'd done just in general, around the station, you'd done general maintenance. And I was never, ever a gardener, but I used to have to dig the little rose beds that Harry had created and weed the platform so that the grass didn't grow in between the slabs and one thing and another. Make sure the bike shed was secured from the outside, except when a train come in. Then I had to nip out, open the doors so that people get off the train, onto the bikes, out. Then as soon as the train had gone, and I used to have to shut the outer doors again. And sweep that up and keep it clean. And it was quite a big bike shed.
Now, were you actually an apprentice porter?
No, a lad porter. It's not a skilled job, being a porter. It's just... it's a nice job because you're always meeting the public, but you've got to be, like everything else, civil. And you've got to keep unruly people, if you could, in the place.
You enjoyed it then?
Yeah, I did enjoy it, actually. Yeah, and then...
That was for a year, so that's 50 to 51.
Yeah, and then then a vacancy came up in the sheds at Leamington for a cleaner, which was cleaning the engines and helping light the fires and that. And so I put in for it, and once again I had to go to Swindon for another medical. And that was another 3-day jaunt, and I got the job, and I went to the sheds in Leamington then. Mr. James was the shed master. And because it was a little shed, the cleaners also used to double up as firemen on the engines.
Now, to take us through what your job, what was the job as cleaner? What was the job as fireman?
Well, you'd work an early shift, a night shift, and a late shift. And I mean, when you're talking in early mornings, you'd be there for 5:30, and that was the main part because you then had to light all the fires in the engines. And you was taught you used to have to and build the blocks. You used to build little frames where you used to put oily rags in, and then you'd put a base section of coal into the firebox, place this thing, light it with a torch, an oily rag torch, and then you'd put the coal on it, and then you'd go and do the next one, and you'd do whatever, how many engines you'd got to do. And then you'd go back to the first one and see how it was going on, and so on. And then if the drivers came in, they might want grease. Because their job, in the driver's job, was then to start oiling and greasing up the moving parts on the engine that was their responsibility. Like the wheels, the runner bars and everything, and sometimes underneath. So if they hadn't got enough grease or it wasn't there when they came, they used to send you to the stores to get it. And you still have to keep your eye on these fires. And then when the fires started burning, you'd spread them out a little bit and put some more coal on, and then once you'd done that, you knew very well that the firemen would be in later on. Sorry about that. The firemen would be in later on then to take over and raise the steam. And the other jobs you used to do was keep the shed generally tidy, run errands. If you was on the early morning shift, one of the jobs you used to have to do was to go around the different houses within a 2-mile range and call the drivers and the firemen. Okay. And call the drivers and the firemen and knock on the doors to make sure that they was up. And there might be 3 of you doing that because of the varied distance in between. And after about 3 months, a job came up in the shunting link, which was down in the Leamington sheds in the South Yard. And I was with a chap called, don't come from Harbury.
And what was your, it doesn't matter too much, what was your job as in the shunting?
You was a fireman on a little engine, a little pannier engine, and you used to move goods trucks, from one side of the yard, from the downside. Now, the downside is away from London. The upside is the side that you go up to London on. That's how they call it, the down and the up. The down and the upside. And you'd be working. I was on the downside. And goods trains would come in on the way to Birmingham, up north, Wales. And they'd drop so many wagons off because they had to be here. and they would then be transferred. You could transfer, we could transfer them from the downside to the upside, but then they could be transferred then to the NMS, which was another station just over. And so they used to come up, sometimes they was unloaded in Leamington, and then we'd transfer them to the south side. And if you was on the south side, on the upside just then used to bring it over. And we used to build trains for movement of all sorts of things, because right by us, we had a big coal yard, which some of the pits used to bring from the Midland area, used to bring coal in. And also, we had Ford's factory, which was where they used to build motor engines, motor engine blocks, if I remember rightly. And we had a cement works, which used to bring stuff down to us. And that was part of the job, was shifting the stuff around from one side of the track to the other. And then that would then be built into a train. Sometimes a train would come in and collect it, and then take it on its journey wherever it was going. Sometimes they'd unload it, and it might tell you down the right. It might go down. It's come on the downside towards Birmingham. We've unloaded it at Leamington, and then it's got to go back on the upside towards London, because it's required, say, two stations down, which the main goods train would not bother with. And then I got to, that was that one. I can't remember the driver's name now. And Soft Sausage was another driver I used to work with. He was a little bloke that was incapacitated. He had two really bad legs that he could never straighten, and he used to walk very awkwardly. But what a nice bloke he was. You'd sit in there, and in the middle of the night, if you had no work on, the driver might go into the shed of the shunter shed and have a cup of tea with them. But the fireman always sat on his engine. He said, "You keep that fire alight, boy," and that was it. And then after about 3 months of that, I think 3 or 4 months of that, I went on to the what they call the banking link. Now, the banking link was used to be situated at Warwick Station. You were set on a banking, a train, on the in sidings at Warwick on an engine. And if a big goods train or a big passenger train came along and wanted to go up Atton Hill, which is by Parkway, if you got that hill, you used to put yourself on the end of it, and then there was a signal, boop, 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 something like that, and they used to, my driver, Ron Luscombe, used to do that signal. Then the master engine would reply, and then we'd start off, and we'd get this train up the top of the hill. And then we'd stop at the top of Hatton Hill, at Hatton Station, uncouple ourselves, and then the train would go on its way, because it was all level into Birmingham then from there. And that was another morning, late and night situation. And from there, one of the links that used to be on there was on a Saturday night, when we used to start on Saturday morning at 4:30. In theory, we should finish at 1:30 in lunchtime. But sometimes it was impossible, because you could be on the way up at Hatton, and you couldn't get back, or things like that, which, you know, where the railways run, and you'd be late getting back. So you had to have 12 hours break. So we'll say, for theory, we used to finish at 3:30 Saturday afternoon. We never started working then until 3:30 Sunday morning. And then, being a live young lad, I used to go out on Saturday afternoons into Leamington, around the shops, and meet probably a couple of girls and what have you, and then in the evening come home, have me tea, and then go out dancing at the Lockheed ballroom until probably midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes I've gone from there straight to work, because I know very well that I've had an early day, and I've said to Ron, my driver, take me bags into work, well then I'll pick them up in the morning, and I used to take me overalls off at work. And he used to take them back to the sheds for me. And then...